This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Live younger, look younger, feel younger at GCNLife.com. The gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So listeners, you know, we all are facing this worldwide catastrophe, the coronavirus. And of course, I feel really bad for everyone who suffers from it, those who've suffered from it and don't know yet because they haven't been tested. And certainly the tragedy of those who are no longer with us. As we do this show, a total of over 200,000 people have been infected. And possibly here, they're talking about up to 3% don't survive, but it may be closer to 1% when more cases are recorded. I've never lived through anything in my life. And what I think about, I'll just tell you two things here. Number one, I take a mild blood pressure medication because they changed the guidelines to make them lower. And it's called Losartan. It is one of the drugs being tested as a possible cure for coronavirus, just one of them. So I don't know if that helps or not, but there it is. But I'll make a comment here because we've got our guest, Sarah Scholes, in abeyance here. She's written a book called They Are Already Here, UFO Culture and Why We See Saucers. And we'll get to that in a very brief moment. But I was thinking here, Sarah, and Kurt Collins also is with us for a while in this episode. I was thinking here, guys, we have the Space Brothers allegedly coming here to help mankind straighten itself out. So we have wars. We have all the problems with refugees in Syria and elsewhere. We have the problem with people in Central American countries fleeing to the U.S. because of horrible living conditions. We have now the coronavirus. Thousands of people died. Hundreds of thousands of people, maybe more, being infected. With all this, E.T. is sitting there on the sidelines after exhorting us to be peaceful. So I think E.T. is feckless. That's it, folks.
With all of the cooperation that's going on now throughout the world, with everybody coming together to try to stop this, who knows?
Sarah, you were going to have a comment.
Oh, I mean, I think I agree with that. Maybe this is, they're just watching to see if we can maybe turn ourselves around and be a little bit nicer to each other if we face some really bad circumstances. I don't know.
Well, then they're taking responsibility for the deaths of lots of people.
That's true. You're going to have to talk to them about that.
Well, that assumes they know how to fix it. There's been the conspiracy that they're behind it. And, of course, if we look at some of the mythology that goes all the way back to, say, ancient Egypt, these strange beings, otherworldly beings, were responsible for plagues and such. So who really knows for sure?
How about how this virus, though, has affected people's lives? I mean, you know, I'm basically a recluse and working my home office all the time, so it hasn't really changed things for me. But my wife, for example, works in the office. They've had to send all the workers to work from home, and for me, there's been basically no change. But how's it affected things with you guys?
Well, I work at home most of the time. On the side, I occasionally try to raise extra cash with Uber and Lyft. And frankly speaking, that's troublesome. I spray my car with Lysol, which at least on the surface at least can kill viruses of this nature. But I have no idea if I'm taking a passenger who's infected. I'm only hoping my blood pressure medicine helps out. It is taking a chance. But I otherwise work at home. Kurt, you work at home. Randall, you work at home pretty much, right?
Sarah, you had your book tour was torpedoed by this, right?
Yeah, I normally work from home, so this wouldn't affect my work life very much. But yeah, I had some in-person events for the book that were canceled and some radio interviews where people needed to do, you know, breaking news coverage of the pandemic, rightfully so. But yeah, here in Denver, lots of stuff is shut down. Lots of people have lost their jobs. Yeah, it's not a good scene, but at least here I think people are obeying the idea that we should all stay away from each other and maybe just play video games and read the UFO internet for a little while.
You have the side effect, folks, of there being fewer arguments.
That's true. You know, I hate to say it, but, you know, hopefully everything is going to work out in the end. But in the meantime, there are some people with some free time that they otherwise wouldn't have had. You know, I went to a movie last Sunday, which, by the way, was a big screen showing of King Kong. It was great. But then the next day, the theater shut down. So you can't go to the movies, at least not here. You got to do something. So there is an opportunity for some UFO research or reading. I don't know if that's much of a silver lining, but we've got that going for us.
We're signed up with Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Prime, Disney Plus, Apple TV Plus. Get all that stuff. Or go to iTunes or Vudu.com and rent some recent movies. Listen, Sarah, we really appreciate you coming on the show on short notice. And I'm sorry that the book tours didn't work out, and I hope things will be there in the future. But you have this book. They are already here. And I'm looking at your credentials and the things that you've done, and you've been interviewed just about everywhere so far, and we're just going to add to that. But why or how did you come to write this book?
Yeah, well, first, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here, and I think my book tour is much less important than the pandemic, so I feel okay about it. But the way I did get started on it is, you know, UFOs were not really a part of my life before December 2017, when the big New York Times story that I'm sure we're all familiar with came out about the Pentagon's UFO research program. I was doing some stories for Wired magazine at the time, and my boss just said, you know, this seems interesting. Do you want to kind of look into it? And so I just started going through the story and trying to, you know, figure out things for myself. And in the course of that research, I met a lot of people in the UFO community and in the kind of scholarship community around it. And they were not who I thought they would be. I met a lot of people who were doing really great research, and I was just interested in what it was that made people, you know, like you all be interested in this in the first place and put so much effort there. And so to try to answer that question is why I embarked on this in the first place.
What did you expect, if anything, when you started out? Any expectations at all?
I try not to have too many expectations because I feel like as a reporter, it's my job to kind of go in with as much of a blank slate as I can, or at least just with the information I can have, and then form conclusions later. So, but the theme that emerged first and that kind of stuck around is that UFO research is kind of the problem that keeps on giving, because there's always a new mystery. There's always also, you know, an old historical mystery. And so people who like problem solving and deep research can always keep themselves really occupied.
Now, looking at it in general here, a lot of us have looked at the UFO culture and found it either eccentric, fascinating, and some people just regard us and others as a bunch of crazies. I totally admit to being crazy, sir.
I appreciate that.
Okay, just a good start, because I'm looking at your background here, and you've certainly done a lot of work for the scientific community. You were an associate. You was an associate editor for astronomy. So you definitely have a solid scientific background. And one of the things, of course, that is lacking in the UFO field, except for very few exceptions, is the involvement of people involved as scientists. So going into that, were you looking at the possibility that UFOs are real, or strictly the kind of people attracted to its study?
I started by looking at the kind of people attracted to its study, and specifically the people who were kind of looking at it from a scientific viewpoint. But I feel like you can't really investigate that without also opening yourself up to the possibility of UFOs being real. Like, I also have to keep kind of a blank slate about that and be, you know, willing to be open to evidence and open to people's experiences and data that they might have. So that was part of it. I didn't think that, you know, I got to spend a year and a half on this book. People have spent decades researching UFOs, and I didn't think that I was going to blaze in here and solve all the mysteries and find out if they were real and if they were aliens in a year and a half. But I was open to the idea.
Okay, Sarah, we have Sarah Scholes, we have Kurt Collins, we have Gene and Randall, you're in.
The Paracast.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items, and entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Attention, fellow Americans. We are now at an all-time high risk of illnesses due to pathogens and viruses. So it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. Do it with new nanocolloidal silver from Americare. Using a patented process with tiny silver particles 1/100th the size of a red blood cell that allows for maximum absorption, Americare's nanocolloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it inhibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, Americare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever at around $1 a day. But supplies are limited. Purchase nanocolloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.
Do you feel like many of us? All the distractions in the world taking our minds and focus off what really needs to get done day to day? Well, Jeunesse has a dietary supplement called Mind to help with mental distraction, and it supports memory function. Go to GCNLife.com now to check it out. You're only at your best when your mind is at its best. Go to GCNLife.com or call toll-free 844-443-6637. That's GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637.
Hey everyone, Proactive MD has an incredible offer for our radio listeners only. Stay tuned for our exclusive offer that includes a free charcoal pore cleansing brush and free shipping. Proactive MD with prescription strength adapalene can heal and prevent future breakouts. Today, for just $19.95, we're offering listeners the three-piece Proactive MD system with free shipping, plus a free gift, the new charcoal pore cleansing brush. Get this exclusive offer by calling now, 1-800-583-8662, or go to proactive.com. And enter promo code radio. You heard right. Proactive MD plus free shipping and a free gift. The new charcoal pore cleansing brush. You'll get all this for just $19.95 and their 60-day money-back guarantee. You're guaranteed to get clear and stay clear, or you get your money back. Call now. 1-800-583-8662. That's 1-800-583-8662. Or go to proactive.com and enter promo code radio. Again, go to proactive.com and enter promo code radio.
1 in 3 adults has prediabetes. 1 in 3. That means it could be you, your football buddy. Your football buddy. Or you, your best man. Your worst man. You, your dog walker. Your cat jogger. While 1 in 3 adults has prediabetes, with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. Take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
I don't want to give spoilers here or prejudge the book, but coming into it, did you have any opinions at all with regard to UFO reality, Sarah?
Yeah, I think I came in with a pretty typical science community mindset, which was just that, well, obviously, since I started the book, I thought there was something worth paying attention to, but that I had never seen any evidence myself that I thought was very hard evidence or very compelling. And so I think I had just kind of dismissed the whole topic before that, really. I thought when you talk to scientists, I think what they say, things like that, you know, I've never seen anything that convinced me, therefore I don't need to pay attention. But something that was interesting to me in kind of getting away from that mindset was the idea that, you know, it only really takes one very mysterious object in the sky to make UFO reality really reality. So a scientist could look at 999,000 things and say, oh, we can figure out what those are, and then all it takes is one. And I think for me, the big change was admitting that there could be a one, even if I hadn't seen it yet.
Something I would like to ask, probably maybe a little off topic, but what was it like for you to work at the Green Bank Radio Telescope as an educator there? Because this is really well known amongst astronomers and anyone who does a bit of ufology homework. I believe it was Yuri Milner commissioned it to see if there were any signals coming off of Oumuamua. And the whole place has just fascinated me. Can you tell us a bit about it?
Sure, yeah. Working in education at Green Bank was my first job out of graduate school. I started when I was about 24. So for people who don't know, the Green Bank Telescope is a radio telescope in pretty remote West Virginia, and there's a lot of restrictions on the kinds of devices and things that you can have because they interfere with the telescope. So while I was living there, I didn't have a cell phone, I didn't have Wi-Fi, I didn't have a microwave. And so it's a little bit like, you know, living in a different era, and it's just a very small town. And when I was there, I was in charge of helping out with kids' science camps. So they would come and use one of the old telescopes and do projects over the weekend or for a science camp over the course of a couple of weeks. And it was great to introduce kids and sometimes college students to the idea that there's this whole universe out there that you can't see with your eyes, but that it emits these radio waves that these telescopes can pick up. And the Yuri Milner project started after I had left there. I wasn't working there anymore when they began that, but it's pretty cool. They do, they looked at Oumuamua, which I feel like I always say wrong, and they are all the time collecting tons of data from lots of star systems to see if they can see some kind of evidence of an alien broadcast. For Green Bank, that's really going back to their roots, because the very first searches for extraterrestrial intelligence happened there back in the 1960s. So it's kind of full circle for Green Bank.
I wonder here, Sarah, and this is obviously a little bit aside from what we're talking about, when we try to listen to a possible alien transmission, of course, we have the situation here where, depending on the distance of that planet, it may have happened decades or centuries ago. And the second thing is, would we even have the equipment to pick it up? We don't know what technology they could be using. I'm not talking about subspace radio, and you know what I mean.
Sure. Yeah, no, that's a good question. And I think it's one the astronomers think about a lot. You know, we think maybe the aliens would broadcast using radio waves, or now we think maybe with lasers. But that's basically because those are the technologies that we have and what we use to communicate. But there's no really, really good reason for us to think that that is what they would use. Actually, the woman who was the head of the search for extraterrestrial intelligence for a long time, her name is Jill Tarter. She, when people ask this question, likes to say something like, you know, why aren't we searching for zeta rays? Of course, the person will say, I don't know, what are zeta rays? And then she will say, I don't know either, but they could be what an extraterrestrial civilization would use. And it's something we haven't even discovered yet. We don't know about, so we can't possibly search for it. But I think the thinking is that you have to start somewhere. And so you might as well start with what you know. And then as you get more creative and your own technology evolves, you can kind of come up with more creative solutions. But even a radio broadcast from an alien civilization, there's no guarantee that we would recognize it, even if it was coming in this kind of traditional way. And also no guarantee that we could figure out what it means, given that we have no, you know, shared background with whoever the aliens are or are not. But it's a very interesting question, I think.
Right. It speaks to the whole Fermi paradox to some degree.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And, yeah,
if they're not using radio, then we wouldn't be detecting them. And that might be one explanation for why, although there should be signs of extraterrestrial intelligence out there, that we still just haven't picked it up yet.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a pretty, I like that explanation for the Fermi paradox, because it means they could still be out there.
At least you'd like it. At least you're, this brings up another thing in your book. You sort of cover in your book briefly some of the culture and, well, I shouldn't say some of the culture. I'd say you really delve into some of the culture. It's mainly about the culture. And of course, you mentioned the X-Files and the I want to believe. The I want to believe syndrome, one person you were saying called it that. And why do people want to believe? And when did belief become sort of one of those shame words in science?
Oh, that's a question for a historian. But I mean, I think there's something very inherent to being human in wanting to believe. Like it's part of human nature to want to believe in something, and especially in something that's better or more powerful than you. And, you know, maybe that's religion, maybe that's aliens, maybe it's just science, like as an institution. I think people treat science as an institution, like a belief system a lot of times. And I do think that the word belief has gotten kind of a bad rap in a lot of the scientific community. And that was actually something that I came around to in working on the book, that it's not that, you know, people get to believe whatever they want. And if it is something that, you know, adds something to their life and also is something they truly can't know. Like, as far as we know, there's not a way right now for us to know if the aliens are out there, if UFOs are here right now. The only option, if you want to think about them this way, is to believe in them. And I don't think that's bad. I just think it's different from the way that we treat lots of scientific claims.
I found that quite interesting when you were saying is that you don't want to believe, you want to know. And so I've been trying to determine exactly what the difference is there. And I'm having a bit of a tough time with that, because for me, it all boils down to evidence.
We're going to be missing out on a few things if we don't stop here for some pieces of business. Sarah Scholes, Kurt Collins, Gene and Randall, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie-cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon you'll need a plan and place to survive. Forget bunkers. You're not a live underground gopher. You need survivalist camps, the ultimate fully functional, off-the-grid mobile survival bug out house that's well-equipped and custom-built to outlast any other RV or trailer. Bold statement, you bet. See them now at survivalistcamps.com. That's survivalistcamps.com. Trust your family's survival to survivalistcamps.com.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says state officials are searching the world for medical supplies as coronavirus cases soar above 10,000 in that state. New York is reviewing 4 possible locations for temporary hospitals. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy is taking a stand.
You can still take a walk outside, go buy groceries, or get takeout from the local restaurant you want to support. but if you do, continue to practice social distancing. But otherwise, we need you to stay at home.
President Trump says he's glad to see that Congress is making progress on a bill to help the stalled economy.
I think the Democrats and the Republicans are going to come up with a package that's going to be really something very special. It's going to help people. This is the first time there's ever been a case where you want people not to work. It's always, you know, you want to create incentive to work.
This is USA Radio News.
If you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS and you cannot afford to make payments to the IRS, you may qualify for the CNC tax program. This is a new program, and if you qualify, you won't make any payments to the IRS while in this program. Once you're accepted into this program, the IRS is forced to stop all harassing collection activities. No threatening phone calls, no wage garnishments, no bank levies, and no more monthly payments to the IRS. Get ready to write this number down. It's the most important number you'll ever need to end your IRS tax nightmare. Call Paramount Tax Relief at 800-547-4804 for a free confidential consultation to find out if you qualify for the CNC tax program. Once you are accepted into the CNC tax program, you won't make any payments to the IRS while in this program. Call Paramount Tax Relief now at 800-547-4804. That's 800-547-4804. Again, 800-547-4804.
If you have diabetes and you're on Medicare, Medicaid, or have private insurance, you may qualify for a new continuous glucose monitor. Managing your diabetes is crucial to your health. The new CGM can automatically and easily help you manage your diabetes more effectively. And by using a CGM, you can eliminate the one thing most people with diabetes dislike the most, finger sticks. Now you can automatically manage your diabetes and end the painful finger sticks. Solara Medical Supplies makes it simple for you to have a new CGM. We'll do all the insurance paperwork for you and deliver the newest in diabetic care technology right to your door. Take charge of your diabetes today with the help of a new continuous glucose monitor. Call now to learn more.
800-547-5331. 800-547-5331. 800-547-5331. That's 800-547-5331.
This is Big the Merciless. You are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. Exactly according to my plan.
Okay, you were in the middle of asking a question of our guest, Sarah Scholes, J. Randall Murphy. Would you please continue?
Sure, yeah. Just before the break, we were just on the trail of coming to the difference between knowing and believing. And I was saying that it all boils down to evidence. And what belief seems to be to me is evidence that is sufficient to justify belief in a claim. For some people, the evidence is more. When they get that evidence, then they know. So where do we draw the line exactly? Knowing and believing seems to become the same thing at some point.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. In that, I think of belief as something where you don't have enough evidence to prove your claim kind of unequivocally. So like if an alien spaceship landed here and an alien got out and we tested their genetic material and we said, okay, that's not DNA, that's something else, then you wouldn't have to believe that they were an alien and they drove a spaceship here because we would have evidence to prove it. So then you could know it. But I guess what you're saying is for some people to go from belief to knowledge, they would need less information than that. Am I interpreting that right?
I'm seeing that sort of you're equating the word belief with faith, because faith would be the absence of the evidence needed to justify belief in a claim, whereas knowing would be having evidence sufficient to justify belief in a claim.
Yeah, I could take that as a semantic criticism of where I'm coming from. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
That's fair. I think to have a belief, you don't have to have. You don't have to right. have the evidence, but you can have a belief with the evidence. So, I think that's fair.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting. I don't get a chance that often to go into things to that level of detail. I think Kurt's got another question here, though, too. So
no, it's the same area. Before we lift the topic of belief, so one of the most ridiculous questions that I think people ask is, do you believe in UFOs? And the reason I think that's ridiculous, it's like asking, do you believe in unsolved crimes? There are definitely UFOs out there. So what I wanted to ask you, Sarah, was, okay, saying something is a UFO, and I know Randall has strong opinions about this particular term, but UFO is an unidentified object in the loose, very loose sense of the word. What do scientists think about unidentified objects? And can they at least kind of meet halfway and say, yes, there are things out there that maybe need study, without committing to the fact that it might be interdimensional or extraterrestrial? You know, can you get them to at least approach the topic from a problem-solving point of view?
Yeah, I think they, like most of the rest of at least English-speaking society, get caught up in the fact that UFO has the connotation of something, like you said, interdimensional or extraterrestrial. But if you sat them down and said, listen, that's not what I'm talking about, that's a particular hypothesis about one type of thing that this might be. What I'm talking about is things in the sky that people can't identify. And if you said, that's what I'm talking about, then I think they would agree that, they would have to agree that people see things that they can't explain, because we have, you know, thousands and thousands of pieces of data that show that people see things they can't explain. I think I've seen some scientists talking about at least admitting the idea that maybe there's some interesting atmospheric phenomenon going on that could explain some of this. So I think they're willing to engage with the topic to some extent if you can take it out of the cultural baggage that comes with it. And I think maybe that's what people are trying to do when they introduce the kind of contentious term UAP, unidentified aerial phenomena, is kind of take away all the connotations that come with the old term. But so I think scientists at a very basic level would admit that UFOs are real, if we're talking about the strict definition.
Well, okay, but there we go with terminology again. And like Curtis says, I mean, he knows what I'm going to say. And that is, and
he warned me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He actually, and yeah, actually you cover this to some extent in your book when you talk about Air Force Regulation 202. Now, when we get looking at that, we're not talking about opinions anymore. We're talking about some very specific regulations and definitions in depth that were created by the people who created the term UFO in the first place. And so for me, I tend to go with that sort of a historical look at where things came from, instead of just saying, well, it's just my opinion that the words that make up the acronym are the literal translation of the word. That's not the case. And we know that there are plenty of acronyms that are out there that are not like that. UFO is no exception. It is anything but something that is simply unidentified. This is not some vague light off in the distance, especially when we get looking at AFR 202. In fact, it makes it very plain that the only thing that they're looking for is anything that is not natural or man-made that we can in any way even presume might be natural or man-made. So in other words, even things like aircraft flares, jet exhaust, condensation trails, blinking lights, steady lights observed at a distance, this is coming right out of it. Even aircraft near airports or things that might be interpreted as an aircraft near an airport were not to be reported as UFOs. They were making it plain that they were looking for something out of this world, something really different, something they don't know anything about. And that fits with the everyday definition that everybody uses. Some sort of an alien craft of some kind, maybe from another star system, maybe interstellar. We don't know where it's coming from, but go on the internet, have a look, type in UFO. You see pictures of flying saucers and ships from out of this world. That's what it does mean. That's what we're dealing with here. Something very extraordinary or out of this world. And that goes all the way back to the official definitions. So what I've seen is people like Neil deGrasse Tyson go, oh, no, it just means it's some identified object. Who knows what it could be? It could be anything. That is not correct. It's a misnomer, and it's a misrepresentation of what it is we're really looking for.
Randall, before we go any further, something kind of interesting is, you know, I think you make a good case there, but do you happen to recall what division of the Air Force ran the UFO investigations?
Well, it was out of Wright-Patterson, and there was, I believe they were involved in the Foreign Technology Division and Intelligence Center.
No, you hit it there. Foreign Technology Division. And one of the things they did was study the aircraft of foreign nations. And if they did get a hold of a flying saucer from outer space, that's the kind of technology they would certainly be interested in to get an edge. So that's all I wanted to touch on there.
Oh, yeah. Well, definitely, Curtis. You're absolutely right. And those were the people who were scientists, engineers. They were the people who were charged with deciding whether or not these reports that were coming in from people represented something that was truly extraordinary or just something mundane. But let's not leave Sarah out of this.
Can I ask a question of you guys?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So then what do you make of this attempt to change the term to UAP? Is that an attempt to get back to these non-terrestrial explanations and take the word back from the Neil deGrasse Tysons of the world, or is it an attempt to do the opposite, in your opinion?
Oh, really interesting. Gene, you have probably – let's start with Gene. What do you think?
Define that.
UAP.
You know what?
Aerospace phenomena.
Aerospace phenomena. You know. I think it dates back to originally when we changed the words flying saucers to UFOs. And the reason, of course, it was done by Captain Edward Ruppelt, was to make the subject seem more respectable. You can say flying saucers, ha, ha, ha. UFOs, wait a minute, maybe we can take it seriously. We'll take this seriously and get back to this. Sarah, Gene, Randall, and Kurt, you're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
We've all seen and perhaps use the alcohol-based hand sanitizers. Have you noticed how it dries your skin, and as soon as the alcohol evaporates, it's no longer effective? GCNteam.com has alcohol-free antibacterial soap and foam meeting or exceeding all requirements set forth by the United States Food and Drug Administration. Come to GCNteam.com. Keyword antibacterial, or call 877-878-4203.
Message and data rates may apply.
Help! Seriously, I'm too young for hair loss.
My hairline keeps creeping back. Receding?
I got this bald spot. It's thinning everywhere.
You're gonna have to give up and shave it.
Dude, put down the razor, because Bosley, America's number one hair restoration expert, is about to give you your real hair back. permanently. Don't ignore the signs of hair loss. Bosley is giving away an absolutely free information kit that reveals all the signs and a free gift card to anyone who texts KIT 88 to 85850. Bosley will show you for free how great your hair could look. Using the latest technology, Bosley's solution to hair loss is permanent and protected by the Bosley Guarantee. Plus, since Bosley has new non-surgical options, you owe it to yourself to text now for an absolutely free information kit and a gift card for $250 off, no matter what level of hair loss you have. Text KIT 88 to 85850. KIT 88 to 85850.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
Hi, this is Bryce Abel. I'm the producer of Dark Skies, the co-author of AD After Disclosure, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
But UFOs has its baggage now, because it's gone on for, 60 years or so. By calling them UAPs, you, in a sense, divorce yourself from the stench of UFOs. It's not tainted in the same way that UFOs took you away from flying saucers. You're trying to make it more respectable. I recall this interview that Hillary Clinton did during the 2016 presidential campaign on one of the all-night shows. And she says, yes, they're called UAPs now, recognizing the difference from UFOs. So again, it's a matter of respectability. And if it becomes like UFOs 10 years from now, they'll come up with something else.
I think it stinks. And I'll tell you why. So flying saucers sounds like an alien spacecraft. And also it implies a specific, the fact that it's a shape and that it's a vehicle. Okay, I can understand. So then go to the UFO, and that refers to an object. But then it says that it's flying. Well, okay, I can understand why the Air Force is concerned with a flying object. But then when you change it to unidentified, what is it? Phenomenon? Aerial. Okay, that means it's in the air. It doesn't say that it's propelled. That can be, like some luminous cloud or something, or some unexplained light. It doesn't mean that it's a craft at all. Then you can include that to, there are things like, they used to call them spook lights, like there's this, I don't know how to pronounce it, Eshtalin is how you say that, or the Brown Mountain lights and the Marfa lights. Well, those are like low quality things, and some of them have even been blamed on things like train headlights or automobile headlights. And you're just lowering the bar for what's a UFO. To make things worse, and this rant's almost over, the Navy is using this term UAP interchangeably with an unidentified drone. It's no better. In fact, I think it's muddier a term than UFO, so I don't think we're gaining any. And besides, from a writer's standpoint, if you say UAP, you're going to have to put in parentheses, UFO. So you're not getting away from it.
Yeah. I happen to agree with both Gene and Curtis. I think it's rather pretentious. It's an attempt to make people who use the word UAP seem to be taking the phenomena seriously, and therefore they should get some air of respectability, whereas the rest of us are a bunch of tinfoil hat wearing, UFO nuts type of thing. And so I stick with the original USAF definition because I know that they were seriously looking into it from as much of a scientific perspective as they could, given what they had back in the day. And they put together regulations that made it very clear that they were looking for something extraordinary or out of this world. And that's good enough for me. I think that's the core of the phenomena. But Sarah, what you've done is you've taken a look at ufology from more of a cultural perspective. And I think that that's a really important evolution away from the science that has to be taken into consideration when you're looking at ufology. We've got other people like Paul Kingsbury, for example, who is looking at it from a social perspective as well. I think it's really important. And I love the way you do that in your book.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I think that was the approach I decided to take because, like I said, I was not arrogant enough to think that I was going to solve all of the mysteries in a year and a half. And also, you know, I've come under some criticism for looking at it from that kind of cultural anthropological viewpoint. It's not meant to be insulting to the community at all to say that here are these cultural aspects that might be influencing the way people are thinking about and researching UFOs, because that's true in anything. Like, it's true of artists, it's true of scientists, it's true of politicians. Everybody is operating within their own culture, and it's an important part of any kind of discipline, I think. That's where I was coming from doing it.
Do you think then that entering UFO research meets a personal need beyond curiosity?
Yeah, I think that it gets at really fundamental human questions. If we're coming at it from the extraterrestrial viewpoint, you know, trying to answer the questions, are we alone? What's the nature of reality for some people? What's the nature of consciousness? I mean, I guess those are curiosity questions, but only curiosity in the same way that a scientist would think of curiosity, where you just want to solve a mystery that's out there. And I mean, I do think for some people, not all people, it also does kind of satisfy a kind of spiritual need, I think, to go after something that is bigger and more powerful than you. So not in a traditionally religious way or anything, but it fills a kind of philosophical part in people's lives. And I think also, like, there's a really cool community around UFOs. I went to, you know, local UFO meetup groups or conferences or things like that. And I had fun. I think it's kind of like any other interest. It's curiosity, personal connection, and then interpersonal connection with the bonus that maybe you could be in on either a great military secret or a great extraterrestrial secret.
You mentioned connection. You interviewed me, several other people studying the topic. You went to a lot of conferences. And one of the things that I heard you mention was that you not only talked to the Pentagon spokesperson, you actually met him in person. How did that go?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, right after the December 2017 revelations came out about ATIP, I thought, you know, I had been talking to the Pentagon on the phone and by email, and anytime you're speaking to a government agency in one of those ways, it's, you know, it's not very personal. Everybody's doing their government speak and I'm doing reporter speak, and I thought, you know, I wonder how far I could get just by going there and talking human to human. So I asked if I could come visit the Pentagon. And a cool thing about being a reporter is that a lot of times people say yes to that. Yeah, I went and met with Major Audricia Harris, who I think is now a lieutenant colonel in a different division. Yeah, for people who haven't been inside the Pentagon, when you first enter and go through the security, give them your social security number and they check you out and everything. Right after that, you enter a gift shop, just like any other place you would go, where you can buy some Pentagon t-shirts and Pentagon magnets. Yeah, then I just, it wasn't a long meeting with, at the time, Major Harris. And we spoke a little bit just human to human, but then at the end of the day, all I could have on the record was some of the same kinds of statements that I'd already gotten. But then I also did go back maybe a year after that just to see if there were any updates she could provide on the program. And I did buy a magnet this time, but I did not get any updates on the program. Yeah, it's an interesting place, although once you get inside and past the gift shop, it's a lot just like being in any other office, I think.
Well, tell us about the conversation. Was she happy to be asked UFO questions?
Yeah, she was. I can't say too many of the details of the conversation since it was on background. But she was very happy to talk to me. Very happy to meet with me. Gave me about half an hour of her time both times, which I think was a lot for someone who was in charge of a whole portfolio of things at the Pentagon. And she, you know, she was not angry or evasive at all. She, it seemed to me like the Pentagon was, at least at the time, I think things have changed, as interested in finding the answers about what this program was as anyone else, because it seemed, I can't fully verify that this is true, that, you know, this, they hadn't been aware of this very much ahead of time. At the spokesperson level. And so they were trying to get the paperwork and get briefed on what was actually going on. And so they were invested in finding the same answers as I was. And then as time went on, it became harder to talk to the Pentagon. The last time I was there was October of 2018, I guess. And after that, there was a new spokesperson, who at first was, said that they would be happy to answer my questions, and then kind of just stopped speaking to me around this time of last year. So I haven't had any, I've been ghosted by the Pentagon for a year.
Well, you know, they've been under siege, and I can understand that. And supposedly there's a new statement that's supposed to be issued from the Pentagon, but I want to come back at, and understand that it was a private conversation that was off the record, but I'm really more interested in the kind of the character of it.
Okay, we got more with Sarah, Kurt, Gina Randall. We're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus doesn't grow on. So it naturally has antifungal, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-infection, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. But maybe more importantly, Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea builds corpuscles in the blood which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer happens to die in oxygen. The tea is great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea is only $34.95 plus shipping. Order now at shopsupertea.com or call 818-984-6100. That's shopsupertea.com or call 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.